A dozen.
You're listening to This Week in Radio News. Radio news about radio waves, radio art, and more. I'm Tom Rowe, your host, and we'll travel across the ether to hear what's going on in radio news. The Local Radio Freedom Act is winding its way through Congress now, and the name sounds like something almost anyone could get behind. Of course, generic, friendly named bills are standard practice in Washington, D.C. now. Similar versions of this bill have failed before with names such as the Performance Rights Act in 2009 and the Free Market Royalty Act in 2013. So forget the name. This is a non-binding resolution backed by the National Association of Broadcasters and introduced by U.S. Representatives Gene Green, Democrat from Texas, and K. Michael Conaway, Republican from Texas. The resolution proposes, quote, "Congress should not impose any new performance fee, tax, or royalty or other charge relating to the public performance of sound recordings on a local radio station for broadcasting sound recordings over the air or on any business for such public performance of sound recordings," unquote. Songwriters get paid each time a song airs on terrestrial radio, but performers do not, though they get paid from airplay on digital or satellite radio, a distinction these days that's not all that clear. Radio airplay is considered promotion for the record, advertising that drives sales, which leads to the performer getting paid. The radio industry has long argued that heavy airplay leads to record sales. Does that sound reasonable? It does in China, Iran, and North Korea, some of the only other countries that also do not pay performance royalties for airplay, according to Olivia Brown at the Future of Music Coalition. Quote, "For decades, local radio airplay has jump-started and sustained the careers of countless musicians and record label moguls," unquote, said NAB President and CEO Gordon Smith in a statement in Billboard magazine last month. Quote, "Local radio's unparalleled promotional value drives increased record and merchandise sales and sells out concert venues. NAB applauds lawmakers for standing with hometown broadcasters in opposing a job-killing performance royalty that would damage the number one platform for exposing new music," unquote. And while the Local Radio Freedom Act sounds like something concerning mom-and-pop locally owned broadcasters, the NAB mostly represents just five corporations. Billboard says that of the 11,357 AM and FM commercial stations in the United States, 850 are owned by iHeartMedia, 450 belong to Cumulus Media, 300 are run by Townsquare Media, 130 belong to CBS Media, and 130 are owned by Entercom. AllAccess.com reports that last week, 13 more House members signed on as co-sponsors of this bill, with two more Senate co-sponsors. Radio World reports that four lawmakers, Daryl Issa, Republican from California, Marsha Blackburn, Republican from Tennessee, John Conyers, Democrat from Michigan, and Gerald Nadler, Democrat from New York, publicly opposed the LRFA, noting in a letter that the resolution, quote, "impedes future debate, it stifles innovation, and it will continue to maintain an unfair playing field," unquote. After the 2004 Super Bowl halftime show and the infamous Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction, the Federal Communications Commission imposed a $550,000 fine against CBS and its affiliates for airing a woman's breast on the public airwaves in the early evening hours when children might be watching. On March 23rd, Michael Malone at Broadcasting and Cable reports the FCC's Enforcement Bureau plans to fine the television station WDJB $325,000, its maximum amount, after it aired, quote, "graphic sexual images," unquote, from an adult film during a news story. The report from the 6 p.m. News July 12, 2012, was about a former adult film star then volunteering with a rescue squad and was accompanied by images of the volunteer's past roles. The video clip in the news story briefly showed male genitalia and a sexual act being performed, according to the Roanoke Times. Quote, "Our action here sends a clear signal that there are severe consequences for TV stations that air sexually explicit images when children are likely to be watching," unquote, said Travis LeBlanc, the FCC's Enforcement Bureau chief. But Jeffrey Marks, the Roanoke station's general manager, said in a statement, quote, "We are surprised and disappointed that the FCC has decided to propose to fine WDBJ for a fleeting image on the very edge of some television screens during a news broadcast. The story had gone through a review before it aired. Inclusion of the image was purely unintentional. The picture in question was small and outside the viewing area of the video editing screen. It was visible only on some televisions and for less than 3 seconds," unquote. That sounds like a fleeting image, sort of like a fleeting remark. In 2003, U2 singer Bono said during a televised Golden Globe ceremony, "This is really, really effin' brilliant," unquote. quote, "We have previously found that fleeting and isolated remarks of this nature do not warrant commission action," unquote. Then FCC Enforcement Bureau Chief David Solomon said after calls for a fine in the Bono incident. That decision may have led to another in 2012 when the Justice Department argued that there was no, quote, "fleeting images exemption from indecency enforcement," unquote. But the Supreme Court and the Third Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals disagreed and tossed out the fines against CBS for the brief Super Bowl nudity. So WDJB might consider appealing this fine, too. New York City is getting into the field recordings game, just like Washington, Boston, Oakland, San Francisco, and Minneapolis. Those cities have installed ShotSpotter, a series of open microphones around the cities that pinpoint the location of gunfire and wirelessly send that information back to police. Quote, "Today we are rolling out cutting-edge technology to make the city safer, to make our neighborhood safer, to keep our officers safer," unquote, Mayor Bill de Blasio said in the New York Times. Quote, "This gunshot detection system is going to do a world of good in terms of going after the bad guys," unquote. William J. Bratton, the New York City Police Commissioner, claims, quote, "On average, 75% of shots fired called in by ShotSpotter are never called into 911," unquote. Critics of the program cite other percentages, such as 7%. Newsday reports a 2013 study found that out of 212 potential shootings picked up by ShotSpotter, about one-third were false alarms and only 7% turned out to be verified shootings. Eben Moglen, a privacy law professor at Columbia University, told the New York Times that potentially incriminating evidence picked up by the microphones constitutes a warrantless search and seizure by collecting public sounds. Why, then, would New York City pick a dubious technology that may violate the Fourth Amendment and only work 7% of the time? Perhaps because Bratton used to be on the board of California-based SST Incorporated, the company that makes SpotShotter. He left the board just before he became police commissioner in January 2014, according to Newsday. Print journalism business lost revenue from many sources in its transition to digital online news. Craigslist, the common wisdom goes, sucked the classified ad business out of the newspapers. Now another online force, even larger, Facebook, is threatening to do more of the same. The New York Times reported this week that Facebook has been quietly holding talks with at least a half dozen media companies, including the New York Times, about hosting their content inside Facebook rather than allowing users to click on a link to an external site. Bloggers these days are having problems with Facebook. They write an article that goes viral on Facebook, but no one clicks on their site because all the information is on Facebook. Without clicks on a site, ad revenues plummet. So the Times announcement has a can't beat 'em, so join 'em quality to it. Quote, "Such a plan would represent a leap of faith for news organizations accustomed to keeping their readers within their own ecosystems, as well as accumulating valuable data on them," unquote, the Times article says. New York Times, BuzzFeed, and National Geographic are said to be the first partners willing to post their reporting to Facebook in exchange for a cut of their ad revenue. Others are pushing back. Quote, "Several employees of The Guardian, for example, have informally suggested to colleagues at other publications that publishers should band together to negotiate deals that work for the whole industry and should retain control of their own advertising, whether content is hosted on Facebook or not," a person with knowledge of the discussion said, unquote, the Times reported. Will Oramus at Slate summed up the two sides, quote, "Collectively, news media would be foolish to put their fate in Facebook's hands. Individually, however, they might be foolish not to." Protesting museums reached a critical mass this week for two different reasons. First, three dozen scientists sent a letter to two science and natural history museums and started a petition calling on them to cut ties with the Koch brothers and anyone else with connections to the fossil fuel industry. The petition calls for David Koch to be taken off the boards of the American Museum of Natural History in New York and the Smithsonian National Museum of Natural History in Washington, D.C. The Koch brothers are billionaire donors to both museums and own Koch Industries with extensive fossil fuel holdings and have funded climate denial. There is currently a large protest movement to get companies, schools, and others to divest fossil fuel funds, similar to the efforts in the 1980s to get companies to divest from investments in South Africa during the apartheid era. The scientists writing the letter say museums of science and natural history should not be associated with, quote, "those who profit from fossil fuels or fund lobby groups that misrepresent climate science," unquote, according to the Washington Post. The campaign is backed by the new Mobile Natural History Museum. At the same time, in the art world, voices are rising against the Museum of Modern Art in New York and its curator-at-large, Klaus Biesenbach. Earlier this week, Christian Viveros Fawn at ArtNet News wrote a thorough account of the issue, calling for the firing of Biesenbach. He's being criticized for celebrity exhibitions that are not art, most recently one celebrating the pop singer Bjork. That show was called out by prominent art critics as, quote, a fiasco by Jerry Saltz and, quote, abomination, unquote, by Deborah Solomon, and the show that turned, quote, MoMA into Planet Hollywood by Michael Miller. Others complain that Kraftwerk's 8-gig show, Retrospective 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 in 2012, and the actress Tilda Swinton sleeping inside a glass box at MoMA, a ripoff of conceptual artist Chris Burden's 1972 bed piece. And Biesenbach has organized only one solo show by a black artist at MoMA and MoMA PS1 since 1996. One anonymous source told ArtNet News, quote, lots of trustees are unhappy with Biesenbach right now, but breaking ranks is a big deal. Change will come about only when the trustees who are in dissent get enough ammo to make their will explicit, unquote. On the phone is Norman Stockwell, the operations coordinator from WORT in Madison, Wisconsin, who is with AMARC, the World Association of Community Broadcasters, at the World Forum of Free Media in Tunisia, in Tunis, in Tunisia. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. Thank you very much for having me on. The there's actually two conferences going on right now here in Tunis. There is the world, it's actually the fourth forum on free media. The first one took place in Belém in Brazil in 2009. The idea is to have a conference to bring together all of the free media activists that are also attending this larger event, which is called the World Social Forum. The World Social Forum has been going on for 14 years now, since 2001, and it was here in Tunis in 2013, and it's taking place here again in Tunis. The march that began this World Social Forum has just ended. I'm actually on the street outside of the Bardot Museum. The Bardot Museum, of course, the place where the tragic attacks took place just about 6 days ago now. And the idea this year at the beginning of the forum was to march from the center of Tunis to the Bardot Museum, partly in solidarity with the people of Tunisia who are reeling from this terrorist incident on their soil, but also to show that the World Social Forum represents people seeking peace around the globe coming together to say no to terrorism and oppression. And that's a very important point. It's not just individual acts of terrorism, but also oppressive governments that they're responding to this year here at the forum.
And is there Tunisian media community radio? Is there public access to the airwaves in Tunisia?
Yes, it's a very interesting story. In Tunisia, prior to their revolution of 2011, it was not legal to have community media. And in fact, a number of stations operated illegally for years, and people were often jailed for participating in community media. And then since January of 2011, the airwaves have opened up, and when we were here in 2013 working with one of the newly created community radio stations, I was working with young Tunisian journalists who had never been involved in radio before. Now there are several new stations that have come on in the last couple of years, so we see it as a really growing sector here in Tunisia.
And Tunisia was the first and, I guess, the most successful of the Arab Spring rebellions. There's a democracy of sorts in Tunisia now?
That is correct. Tunisia had its Arab Spring beginning in December of 2010, and they were able to overthrow their dictator, Ben Ali, and they created an interim government, and then they had peaceful democratic elections, which makes them in many ways the most successful of the Arab Spring revolutions. And yet, if you talk to the Tunisian people here, they'll still say that there's a lot of work to do, that there is greater human rights for the individuals, the people in the street here, but there's still many changes in the system that need to be made, and that the many of the old ways, the old ways of thinking still exist in the leadership. So it's a transitional moment for this country, and I think they're working to build this new and fragile democracy, but it's definitely true that that they have been more successful than some other countries where we've seen terrible violence break out in the wake of the Arab Spring revolutions.
And I'm guessing that you're talking to other people from around the world about the impact of community radio in different communities around the world. What is that conversation like?
Yeah, well, exactly. The Free Media Forum, which is FMML, the World Forum on Free Media, FMML.org on the web, and you'll see there the charter and other documents in many different languages. Part of the march is just going by us in the background right now, so you'll hear some car horns and things like that. The Free Media Forum is about gathering and showcasing different forms of community media and for people to be able to share stories of successes and also stories of, you know, failures and concerns. And so we've had people talk about issues in various countries, both with the regulatory environment and also technologies. But it's a chance for people to come together and discuss these issues. And in particular, here in Tunis this year, the work is on completing a document that is a charter, which, again, you'll see on the website there. But the charter was initially drafted here in Tunis in 2013. And this week, one of the goals of the forum is to try and sort of flesh that out further. The charter speaks to the rights of people to communicate around the globe, the rights of free media in democratic societies. And so it addresses issues of the Internet. It addresses issues of economic sustainability, as well as the issues that, you know, are more common there in the United States when we talk about free media and we talk about free speech. I mean, this is a broader vision of the what's required to have a truly successful free and open media.
And can you give our listeners what sort of the breadth of the kind of participation there? Are there lots of representatives from Africa, the Middle East, Asia? Where are people coming from?
Yeah, well, of course, we're in Africa, and so there's a very large representation from Africa, and particularly Francophone Africa, because, of course, the history of Tunisia is one of being a French colony, and so French is the other language that's spoken here besides Arabic. But at the World Social Forum itself, which starts today and will be running through the 28th, there's some 4,035 organizations representing 130 countries that are gathered together. And just to give you an example, it's 131 organizations from Egypt, 136 from I've lost my notes here now, but anyway, it's large representation from Africa, and particularly North Africa, where people are able to travel here more easily. It's a little bit more expensive, coming from other parts of the world, but there's a strong representation from Brazil, which was, of course, the founding country of the World Social Forum. And the Free Media Forum that's going on represents all of those different countries as well.
And is there a common problem among community radio stations around the world that you're talking about, or is there an emerging issue?
Well, there's several issues, I think, that confront community radios worldwide. One of those is the issue of sustainability. More and more community radio is faced with the question of economic sustainability. It can't simply be one rich person throws some money at it, whether it be an NGO or some rich donor like George Soros, but rather there has to be a way to integrate these stations into the lives of their communities in the way that they can become economically sustainable. A second issue is technologies. We see, more and more the advance of technologies and incorporating the Internet and cell phones and so on into the daily practice of community radio. But those mediums, the Internet and cell phone technology, are more and more becoming controlled by corporate interests. So, again, people are looking at the question of access to technology and ensuring access to a free and open internet as these community radio networks are building out in these different countries.
And is there still a large growth of community radio throughout the world at this point?
Yeah, very much so. Community radio is growing around the globe. We've seen here in Africa in the last couple of decades, thousands of new stations emerging, particularly in the wake of the Arab Spring in North Africa. We've seen a blossoming of community radio in places like Tunisia. Also in Libya, unfortunately, you know, in the midst of a renewed armed conflict, but community radio has been growing there in spite of that. And around the rest of the globe, in Asia, in Latin America, community radio is very well established. But in Asia, we've seen a huge growth of community radio over the last decade or so. And in Europe as well, growing community radio there. You would think, you know, the nations of Europe would have been, you know, far ahead. But in fact, England only created its current legal community radio sector in the year 2000. So it's really kind of a new phenomenon in many places. It's a, I think it's part of the growing sense around the world of the importance of free and open networks of information. And radio is still the tool that's able to reach that last mile where the internet might not go, but community radio can still reach to, you know, remote areas and places where they don't even have electricity. You can have a battery-powered or a crank or solar-operated radio receiver.
And is it still a problem worldwide with some of these local community radio stations being targeted for the free speech that goes on there by entrenched interests or rebel groups or conservative religious groups? Or
well, yes, I think that, I mean, I think you see that in terms of journalism everywhere in the world today. The number of journalists that are under attack in various countries across the globe has continued to rise in recent years. In the case of community radio, you know, the stories are different in each country. I mean, we hear of radio stations being attacked for their outspoken nature physically, you know, where the stations are actually bombed or destroyed. And then we hear stories of stations where the government simply makes the regulatory environment more difficult. And so the community radios have difficulty obtaining a license. I know, you know, one station I spoke to where they've been waiting years to get the paperwork to go through for their license to broadcast, even though they've, you know, been working on getting everything set up and working through the legal system. So these kinds of attacks on the right to communicate continue. But I think that you're seeing more and more around the globe a consciousness among people that this is a valuable and important resource. And so you see things like this charter coming out from the Free Media Forum that are calling for the right to communicate. Of course, the UN Declaration of Human Rights, December 10th, 1948, Article 19 speaks to the right to communicate as being one of the essential human rights. But it's taken us, 60-plus years to see that actually happen in many of these countries.
I was wondering if we could end on a positive note. Have you heard a specific story from a station about the impact of community radio in one community?
Well, you know, I mean, there's so many wonderful stories. I just came shortly ago from a workshop with a bunch of African community radio practitioners that were talking about different things that they do in their community, in their communities. In South Africa, they talked about going into, creating public forums to discuss elections and having people from the community come and, you know, ask questions directly of the candidates. In Ghana, the community radio station there, Radio Ada, has a journalist who goes out to the fish market every morning with a cell phone and calls back to the radio station with the price of the fish that day so that people that are walking 2 hours from their village can hear over the radio what the proper price for fish should be so they don't get cheated on the way to the market. So, you know, little stories like that, but happening in every country around the globe in different ways, and very, very exciting uses of the technology of community radio to involve people and to spread democracy.
If anyone wants to find out more, are you making recordings? Are there going to be a special on WORT when you get back, or can you send us to some websites?
We'll be doing some programming on WORT, but I would point people to the website of AMARC, the World Association of Community Broadcasters. It's www.amarc.org, and there'll be a special page there with coverage from the forum. It'll be in several different languages, French, Spanish, English, and maybe some Arabic, and it'll be radio reports that are available for download and rebroadcast on community radio stations in the United States.
All right. Thank you so much for calling in today. Norman Stockwell, from the operations coordinator from WORT in Tunis in Tunisia at the World Association of Community Broadcasters meeting in the World Forum of Free Media. All right. Thank you, Norman.
Thank you very much.
Bad guy.